You're listening to the OneofUs.net podcast network. OneofUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneofUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Hello, this is Bradley Martin with the Screener Squad. Happy to talk to you today about a film called Fanatic, but I won't be doing this alone. I have our good friend and new colleague, Julian, who's going to bust
here
down.
Here I am.
Here he is with the synopsis.
Ready to be fanatical. So this film, directed by one Fred Durst, is about basically a super fan who basically becomes a stalker. And that pretty much sums
up. Not a stalker. Yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty good impression, man. But no spoilers here. But basically the summary of this film is, what's his name? I almost said Elton John. No, it's it's definitely not Elton John. It's John Travolta.
John Travolta, yeah.
John Travolta loves this one guy. And he's a super fan. He's the guy who's buying his dirty underwear from Dirty Underwear 6, The Adventures of Space Underwear, and things like that. And before I get into this, Bradley, how did this movie hit you? Like, from the start? Because this left a taste in my mouth right from the get-go. Like, I won't say if it was good or bad yet, but boy, does it leave its mark.
It's a weird movie. And I'm not sure if I mean that as confusing. It certainly has a very easy to understandable plot, especially in our nation, where we are a bunch of crazed celebrity fame-seeking whores.
And it definitely had some of those elements of Ingrid Goes West, where people don't acknowledge their own lives and they're just so hyper-focused on these people's lives that half the shit they're focused on isn't even really true.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great movie, Aubrey Plaza. But staying on topic with this one, because, you know, when I go into a segue, I stay lost forever. I felt that I haven't seen Gotti, but I'm guessing that Gotti was a lot like this. John Travolta taking, John Travolta taking some huge swings to try and get back into that limelight or revitalize his career as an A-lister. And these are the results.
You know, I thought about Gotti watching this movie, but the thing is that Gotti fucks itself with the editing. That movie's badly edited, and that's why you don't understand anything. Like, John Travolta might be good in that, but I couldn't tell you because I wasn't able to watch a properly edited movie. But let's talk about the good things first, or what we might think is good, because I don't think there's all bad here. Even though, a little disclaimer here, I love bad movies, and I went into this hoping for a really good bad movie, and I was not 100% disappointed. But, like, by far, the best thing about this is John Travolta. Like, this is going to sound crazy, like an exaggeration, and I'm curious if you agree or not, but I thought that he kind of disappeared into the part. Like, his character wasn't super, super defined. Like, it was enough that I was like, okay, this is the type of Asperger's fanboy type character this is. But I was still like, they could have made it more fleshed out and more grounded to what the movie was setting up. But I thought that he was definitely the best part.
Oh, yeah, and it's always good to see John Travolta act, I think. You know, I was a fan when I was, like, a little kid, from Grease to Look Who's Talking. Not the best movie, I realize that, but these are what I grew up with, so I'm always happy to see him, especially take these awkward chances. The problem with his character, I'd say, mostly must be with the script, because its understanding of the Asperger or autistic spectrum seems to come from the mind of what Eric Cartman thinks someone on the spectrum would be like.
Very, very surface level stuff for sure. And my whole thing that I was going on about how it wasn't like as well thought out as it could have been, because he's focused on this made up celebrity, right? like Hunter Dunbar.
Yeah, I believe Hunter is the name. Dunbar. That's such a cool made-up celebrity name, too.
Yeah, right. But the thing that was weird for me watching the movie is they're like, this guy is obsessed with him. Like, he loves him. Like, every time someone mentions that actor, John Travolta's character, Moose, by the way, which was the original title of the movie, which I'm glad they switched it, but I really do like that name. But either way, he wasn't so much in love with Hunter Dunbar's work. Like, he mentions it, but when they have flashbacks and he's being really influenced by what he's watching, it's more like Fred Durst wanted to take this opportunity to go, actually, this is a movie that I love. I'm going to mention Night of the Living Dead right here. Instead of having a really nice moment to be like, this is where he first fell in love with these movies. And that's kind of where we can kind of get into, like, the cliches of this movie. Like, I laughed my ass off, dude, when they literally had the scene in black and white of Moose as a kid and, like, his mom is making out with a stranger. And it's, yeah. And the kid's like, who's that man, mommy? And then he's like, your kid likes TV, huh? And it's like, okay, like, I could have done without that. Didn't really have a purpose for it. It's kind of corny. But I really think that... Fred Durst needs to make more movies. That's what I gathered from this, honestly.
Oh, sure. It's clear that he's a creative person, and he's been as such since the 90s when he was in, what was that band? Limp Bizkit, I want to say?
Limp Bizkit! Yeah!
I knew that. I was just being facetious, if I used the word correctly. I did think it was silly that they used the same clip from that film that all the TV shows use, you know, they're coming to get you, Barbara. Is that like the only public domain clip from that movie or something?
Actually, the whole movie is actually public domain because Romero fucked up getting the rights for that. Yeah.
Ah.
But that was just one of those things where it's like the movie would have benefited a lot from them like almost parodying that, because the movie takes itself seriously to the point of it being a fault, but it's such a big fault that it teeters over into kind of like awesome, hilarious, unintentionally hilarious. Like, it definitely takes a sharp turn into that category, I would say, and it did deliver on what I was looking for, but it made me say what the fuck out loud way more than I was expecting. way more, because the movie's a little bit tedious. But you mentioned at one point that you weren't wild about the dialogue. I was, like, the first 5 minutes I was confused, because I was impressed with how, like, the dialogue wasn't super shitty and how Travolta was really making it work. Like, I think that, like, a couple of the things that I mentioned before about his character not, you know, falling in love with, like, the things that he says he's in love with and then showing us something different, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But the thing I want to ask you about, though, I'm jumping too far ahead. I want to ask you about the opening fucking credits of this movie. What did you think? Because I went to school studying film, and I loved art film classes. So I was like, oh, sick, neon colors with some home footage. I love it. Artsy as fuck. Give it to me. But everyone else, I imagine, just watching it going, yikes, the fuck is this?
No, I didn't have that reaction. I was cringe on the narration. And
oh, yeah.
But it wasn't terrible narration. I just don't... I want to say I'm that type of guy in the back of the bus that's all like, why is there narrating? I need to know why there's narrating. And if there's never a point
Fred
where...
Because Fred Durst loves movies, man. He wants that storytelling element. He likes that. He's definitely into the French Nouveau, 100%. He wants someone... I think that was a good element that they brought. I actually liked it. That was before it really veered off into what the fuck.
Well, that's true. I like that Los Angeles was a pretty big character in this. You don't really see that a lot, especially with filming locations being a pain in the ass.
Yeah, and that reminds me, too, one thing, because I sat through the credits because I was like, man, if there's going to be a stinger that I want to see, it's for fucking Moose, or I mean the Fanatic. But that was the thing that tripped me out, was at the end credits, it's like, made in Alabama. I was like, no, it was not. if this was made in Alabama, then Alabama sure looks a lot like L.A.
Well, it was probably just stock footage of L.A., right? I don't know how that editing works.
Man, I don't. Now you just, like, fucked up my head. Like, maybe. Like, a lot of those shots were on corners, and those could have been just sets. But I think that we need to be honest with our audience listening to this. Because I don't think I can 100% recommend this movie to people.
No, and I can respect that. I'm not sure I would recommend it to a lot of people, but there's a few niche people I know that enjoy being surprised and probably have the same nostalgia for John Travolta I do. Now, it's not huge nostalgia, mind you. Like I said, I still haven't seen Gotti, but everyone was so quick to dump on Gotti. I was like, I don't want to see my boy get dumped on, so I just avoided it.
Gotti is unwatchable. Like, it's edited in a way where you will be more confused after watching it than after having seen, like, the trailer. Like, the trailer will give you an idea. It's like, oh, it's a gangster movie with Travolta. You watch it after, it's like, is this guy in jail? Like, what the fuck is going on? Because it jumps through time in a way that makes no sense. But we're not talking about Gotti. You got it? We're talking about The Fanatic here. And I just think, like I mentioned a little bit, like, I think that the cliches are what really fucked up this movie. But what carries it is, I don't know if humor is the right word, but the...
I'd say it's a dark comedy, yeah. It's got some
pretty dark jokes. The whole what the fuckery of it.
Like, what are we
watching? I think... Yeah, I think that's what really carries it home. Because, like, you met that character who was narrating. I thought that they were going to be the protagonist at first.
Same.
And I thought that that was a good idea.
It was Leah, I believe, played by Anna Golja, who's Moose's friend. And that's pretty much the extent of it. I mean, they're pretty good friends. I thought she was going to be his helper or assistant. You know,
I thought that they were in a relationship because they have like a couple moments like where they say, I love you to each. They said, I love you to each other in a way that seemed pretty intimate, like that they had a history or something. So that's the thing about the movie is it swerves through a bunch of lanes. Classic art film, you know, ideas.
Okay.
Where it's just like it's not like sticking to one thing. It's being maybe a little bit vague about something and then it's being very concrete with other scenes, like especially like the last scene. Like that is just like his character almost doesn't even make sense, right? Like a lot of this movie doesn't make sense.
No, right. Like, but I said, his name's Moose. He lives alone. He's at times heavy on the spectrum and at times incredibly light on the spectrum. I don't know how that works. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. It didn't seem possible to me, though. At one minute, he doesn't know what bolt cutters are, but in the next minute, he can imitate a British police officer incredibly well. That was bananas.
Yeah, I think he was just trying to get across. Again, you got to think like an art film, like where you have like just fucking extremes. It's like, oh, he doesn't know what bolt cutters are. He thought they were scissors. And like, he's a hardcore actor, so look at him do this classic British officer.
But he became like a different person when he was the British officer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that he was a loser, like, consistently. Oh, ouch. But, dude, the movie is very clear about that. Like, he is a loser, and his friends are, like, wannabe friends are also losers.
Yeah.
Like, who are hustling people on the street. Like, I thought that that was a little bit of a odd choice. Like, why is John Travolta, aka Moose, like, this is his outlet for acting? Like, I think it would have been a lot more compelling to see that character go through auditions and have him sit in a room with other actors who look like him and having him be anxious about that. He's like, oh, he looks like me. I think that he nailed, like, the mannerisms. Like, I'm someone who watches a lot of improv theater.
Okay.
And that character came across as someone who really has someone nailed out. But, like, when you try to really flesh out the character, there's nothing really there. Like, his whole mannerism of sniffing behind his ear and specific choices like that Moose would make that really made that character come to life to me. Because, I mean, because that's what carries it 100% for me. Besides, obviously, besides Fred Durst's amazing direction, which, technically, I'm curious, what did you think of the technical aspects of this movie? Because I thought that they met the bar. Like, it didn't, like, blow my mind, but it looks like a Hollywood film.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think they were bad. I actually liked all the random artistic vignettes that were thrown out through it. They kind of looked like album covers, and they conveyed the emotion at the time. Those were fun.
I almost forgot about that. Those were weird as fuck, dude.
They were. Like, I thought they were like pretty fun. They were cool.
Like, I thought that it was working, like, as a bookend for chapters, but then near the end, they happen a little bit, like, too often. Like, that's one of the worst things about the movie, is the ending. Like, it's sloppy is understatement of 2019, but
yes,
it's fun.
No, it's like they painted themselves into a corner, and rather than the person in the corner saying, I guess I'll live here now, they scream and run through the wet paint and track it down the hall. That's what the ending is. And maybe that's your thing, though. You know, maybe some people would like to see that. But
some people like their movies looking like someone tracking paint through their house.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole style of those paintings, I'm not 100% on this, but a little bit of Limp Bizkit facts for you, Bradley. Wes Borland, the guitarist of Limp Bizkit, paints all their album covers. And that looked very similar to their latest album, Gold Cobra, from 2012. So I would go out on a limb and say that Wes Borland did those paintings.
Well, they did have kind of a resonance of an album cover, especially towards the end of the film, you know, when they were getting more elaborate.
Yeah, the style that he went with, the color palette was different, but now that you mention that, they had very much a reminiscent style of the most recent Tribe Called Quest album cover, like the way that it incorporated spirals and like the dot lines and shit like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I gotta ask you, this is the film's major failing for me. It's not John Travolta's acting. As I said, big John Travolta fanboy. Tell me more.
He's fun as fuck.
The sympathy in this film, it seems to want it, but it never earns it. I don't think there's a single sympathetic character in this picture, but what do you think?
You know, I honestly, like, I felt sympathy for everyone but John Travolta's character. Just because I don't want to say any names, but the reason why I bought his character so much is he reminded me of people I've met. Okay. Like, just the way that he walked around and the way that he talked in particular, like, that reminds me of real people. But as far as sympathetic characters goes, I would say that, like, the protagonist, no sympathy for him. Like, that's a spoiled brat. Like, that's what he felt like. Like, his character makes no sense. As someone who lives in LA, there is no way that he could survive and have a home the way he does and spend money the way he fucking does, being a busker on the street, being a British cop. But I will say that I'll kind of like how in the movie Good Time, I did not feel bad for Robert Pattinson's character, but every single person he interacted with, I felt bad for them. Like, and I can't say it's the same for this movie.
Yeah.
Exactly, because there's some characters, it's like, all right, I get it. He's an asshole. Get it? Because he's a thief.
Yeah.
Filmmaking. But some of the other characters, it's like, what the fuck, man? Like, that person was just standing there. And even the people who are dickheads, like Moose will like all of a sudden lose his shit. And those are some of the best surprises I think that the movie has to offer. Because I wouldn't say there's twists, but there's some turns and it goes left and right, I'd say. But as far, just to end off my sympathy rant here, I would say that I felt some sympathy, but the most sympathy was definitely for Fred Durst.
Okay.
And shout out to Limp Bizkit premiering a song in this movie. How they just crowbarred that in there. Like that one. Remember the part where the dad was in the car with us? So he's like, hey, you want to hear something cool?
Yeah.
You like Limp Bizkit? And then they play like this heavy ass riff. And I don't know if they've released a song yet, but the way that they were talking in the lyrics, like, it's like, yeah, you're obsessed, you're crazy, you're a And then the song stops because the guy gets out of the car.
Oh, you think he was going to say Fanatic, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah, I do. That is as Fred Durst as you can Fred Durst.
I'm surprised he can still sing like that. It's got to be a huge strain on the voice.
Fred Durst is a rapper and a screamer, okay?
Yeah.
Fred Durst, if you happen to listen to this, by the way, I fucking love you, man, and I'm still drinking hot dog water and hot dog and chocolate starfish flavored water, and I'm still looking for a couple more $3 bills, y'all. Wow. Just a couple.
Oh, wow.
Deep cut. fuck, if I say fuck two more times, that's 46 fucks in this fucked up rhyme. So what else didn't tickle your fancy about this movie?
We'll be wrapping this up soon. Like I alluded to earlier, we're living in a celebrity culture where fame is chased, and the kings of this country are those who can shine in the silver screen. I did not think Hunter Dunbar was very much of a celebrity, to be honest with you. I thought he was obsessed with like a B-list actor, but it didn't come across that way as the film progressed.
I definitely agree. And that's why I think that he needed to pick a lane with it, because he's referencing made up shit.
Yeah.
But then he's like, my favorite movie ever is Night of the Living Dead. Because imagine it wasn't Hunter Dunbar. It was like Harrison Ford.
Oh,
like,
that would be.
That could have been amazing.
Well, Harrison Ford would have crushed this script too with his gravelly voice.
Yeah, I think that he would have. I think that he's maybe a little bit too old, but you know who would. Yeah. You know who'd be a good, because you need him to be old enough that he could have a kid.
Oh,
but
that's
not
true.
So old that if he has a young kid, it would look weird.
Right, his kid would be like in his 40s. I see what you're saying.
Curveball.
Yeah.
Hunter Dunbar, played by Mahershala Ali.
Oh, wow.
Microphone drop.
Yeah. That really makes this a lot more interesting. Now, Devon Sawa plays Hunter Dunbar, and certainly I don't want to crap all over his performance. I just don't think he was given a stand, you know? He wasn't given any conviction. It was, I'm a celebrity, and I'm also an asshole, I guess. And that's all we really get to see of his character.
Yeah, they don't use all the real estate they have that they could have established him as, like, a better character. Like, the most you get of Hunter Dunbar is flashbacks that never happened.
Yeah.
Or like a home movie that you watch with no fucking context that makes no sense until the movie is 5 minutes from being done.
Mm-hmm. And these characters that Moose encounters, when they're an asshole to him, like you said earlier, I think you were saying anyways, the film kind of gives us an excuse to be like, oh, poor Moose. But that's never been good enough for me. Like, of course this guy's an asshole. That can be his character. But why should that mean that I should wish harm on him? In other words, that's ridiculous. I actually sided with the celebrity on every encounter because I'd imagine maybe I would be an asshole if I was rich and famous. I can't say I wouldn't be, at least not with my hand on a religious text or anything. But I do see all the concerns in his eyes, as they say, that I would also have. I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing around my house? Like, I feel like I'd say that immediately, even though I'm supposedly a very sweet and nice guy. So I don't.
Yeah. But like, it escalates in a way that felt pretty natural for the Hunter Dunbar character to be like, all right, dude, what is your fucking problem? Like, this is my house. My kid lives here. I'm warning you, stay away from me. And like, there's that really nice scene where he shows up to his house, and I won't say what happens, but it definitely plays with you in a way that it's, I don't know, that the movie is more horror-oriented than I expected.
No, and I agree with you, especially as it gets into its third act. It goes straight up bonkers horror show. And, you know, without spoiling anything, that's our mantra here on the Screener Squad. Why don't we just jump into our final thoughts before we go over 30 minutes?
Sure. Yeah, I was just going to say, you can go ahead and I'll wrap it up.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, big John Travolta fan from way back. I liked seeing him take a big chance on this character. I don't think the character makes a lot of sense. I personally have befriended several people who are on the spectrum. I never got myself tested. Maybe I'm dipping my toes in the spectrum as well. I don't understand his character. I don't understand how sometimes he can be affluent in Hollywood speak And then other times, as we pointed out earlier, no spoilers, of course, he doesn't know what bolt cutters are. Sometimes he's playing I Am Sam, but sometimes he's playing, was it Jeff Daniels from Flowers to Algernon after he's gotten the medication? So it's all over the place. It's really just all over the place. But I actually had a lot of fun watching this. It's well-timed. It's not a long movie. You don't really know where it's going to go either. I was kind of shocked. The ending is incredibly messy. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I can't think of an alternative to how it closes out. So maybe I need to see a lot more thrillers. Who knows? So I'm going to give this 6 blimey cockney cops on 10 boulevards.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I actually agree with a lot of the things that you said. I think that this movie is relentlessly interesting. And I do not think that it 100% succeeds in the way it wanted to. But it's a really good effort. And if any, it's one of these, like, I don't know how to fucking describe this. It's like a 10-pound bag of shit that managed to balance in a 5-pound bucket, you know? Like, it's not completely falling apart until you get to the last 5 minutes and you're like, okay, some shit is dripping over the edge. Like, I'm gonna leave now. But I'm gonna give it the most Limp Bizkit rating I can think of. I give it 6.9 gold cobras out of 10. This is definitely gonna end up in my list of bad / interesting / movies that are not for everyone list, I guess I'll say. But definitely check it out. If it does play in theaters, I might go give it a spin and laugh my butt off watching it. But definitely check out The Fanatic. I recommend. It's fun garbage. I love you,
Julian recommends that. Boom. No, yeah, this actually would be a lot of fun to see with 30 people or so.
Oh, dude, this is definitely one of those movies that people say, you grab a pizza, grab a beer, and then you go, yeah, where are my friends?